Iranians hold nationwide rallies to condemn a French magazine's insults to the country's religious and national values. A Black Lives Matter co-founder says one of his relatives has been killed after being repeatedly teased by the Los Angeles police. And Ukraine says it has become a de facto member of the NATO military alliance, given the continued supply of weapons by the West. Hello and welcome. Your world news coming to you live from our headquarters in Tehran. My name is Gisum Shahmadi. Iranians have rallied in several cities to protest insulting cartoons published by a French magazine, Charlie Hebdo. The Iranian protesters condemned the French magazine for insulting their religious and national sanctities and values. They also slammed the French government for its double standard approach towards freedom of speech. Iranian officials have also reacted to the publication of cartoons. President Ebrahim Raisi condemned the sacrilege. He said, resorting to insults under the pretext of freedom indicates the West's despair and failure in their recent riots that they fanned in Iran. Separately, Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani advised the French authorities to follow the basic principles of international law, and that is mutual respect and honoring religious values of other countries. Iran's foreign minister says Tehran will continue to offer solid support to the resistance movements in Lebanon and Palestine in the face of threats and aggressions by the Israeli regime. Hossein Amir Abdullahian made the remarks in a joint press conference with his Lebanese counterpart following their meeting in Lebanon's capital. The minister said they discussed ways to expand trade, economic and tourism cooperation, as well as regional developments. He said Iran is now ready to build power plants in Lebanon. Amir Abdullahian said Iran has been and will be a friend of Lebanon in tough times. Elsewhere in his remarks, he urged the Lebanese political parties to quickly engage in dialogue over picking a president for Lebanon. He said Iran has not interfered in Lebanon's internal affairs, and it is certain that the Lebanese parties can agree on a single candidate without interference by any other country. Iran's top diplomat is scheduled to meet Lebanon's prime minister, the parliament speaker, during his visit. To Palestine now, the health ministry says another youth has succumbed to injuries sustained during an Israeli raid near the West Bank city of Jenin. 18-year-old Abdul Hadi Fakhri Nazal has been hit in the chest and the neck by Israeli forces live fire in the town of Qabtiya. He was taken to hospital in critical condition. Nazal was the second casualty of Israeli forces' assault on Qabtiya to arrest Palestinian fighters. Earlier, the 25-year-old Habib Muhammad Ismail died of wounds sustained from Israeli forces' gunfire. The new fatalities came after Israeli troops killed 41-year-old Samir Aslan during an overnight raid in Galandia refugee camp in occupied Al-Quds. Israeli soldiers have killed 9 Palestinians since the start of the year, including 3 minors.
One more Palestinian was shot dead early Thursday by Israeli soldiers, this time during a raid in Galandia refugee camp north of Al-Quds. 41-year-old Samir Aslan was killed only minutes after his 17-year-old son Ramzi was arrested by the Israeli soldiers from their home. Aslan, with other family members, went to the roof of their home to watch what was going on, but a sniper shot him in the chest and soldiers prevented his family members to transfer him to hospital until he died. Samir Aslan is the third Palestinian killed in the occupied West Bank in the last 24 hours. Israeli forces killed 18-year-old Sanat Samamri following an alleged stabbing attack in the southern occupied West Bank city of Al-Khalil. On Wednesday, 21-year-old Ahmed Junaid was shot dead in the head during a military raid on the Balata refugee camp in Nablus, north of the occupied West Bank.
The continuation of these raids and campaigns means that this current Israeli cabinet will continue the aggressive policies against the Palestinians in a bid to fight resistance and prevent any form of activity in the occupied West Bank.
Tensions have been running high in the occupied Palestinian territories since last year. Nearly 180 Palestinians have been killed in the West Bank alone in 2022. The United Nations said death toll was the highest since 2006 in the occupied West Bank. The Israeli military's brutality shows no sign of abating and is cracking down on Palestinian fighters as well as the general population here. Palestinians warn of even more aggressive policies by Israel's current right-wing regime led by Benjamin Netanyahu. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
Now to the United States, where police brutality takes another victim. A black man, Kenan Anderson, died hours after he was repeatedly tasered and restrained by Los Angeles police following a traffic accident. Anderson, 31 years old, was a teacher and a father. He was also the cousin of Black Lives Matter co-founder. Anderson went into cardiac arrest several hours after this encounter on January the 3rd. Los Angeles police released body camera footage of the incident after a sparked outcry. They say Anderson tried to run away after a car crash. The cause of his death has not been officially determined. The Black Lives Matter says Anderson was killed by the police. His death brings to 3 the number of people killed in encounters with Los Angeles police in less than a week. Police brutality against black people is a source of public outcry in the U.S. Also happening in the U.S., a tornado and powerful storms have ravaged the southeastern state of Alabama, leaving 6 people dead. Local officials say the victims were killed in Ogata County. Other parts of Alabama have been hit as well, with at least 6 of them declaring a state of emergency. Storms have continued to hit neighboring state of Georgia as well. High winds and heavy rains have damaged homes, leaving thousands of people without power in both states. The National Weather Service says at least 2 storm systems are also set to hit California and the Pacific Northwest starting on Friday and over the weekend. 19 people have already been killed in the week in California and floods triggered by heavy rains. To Latin America now. In Peru, people turned out in the capital to protest the government's response to the ongoing unrest sparked by the ouster of former President Pedro Castillo.
It's not fair. I know of people taking to the streets to protest, and they are outraged like me. We're being accused of being terrorists, but we aren't terrorists.
Protesters held placards reading "Down with a dictatorship." They chanted slogans against incumbent President Dina Boluarte, calling on her to resign. At least 42 people have been killed since the unrest broke out in Peru in December. Over half of them were killed in the past few days. Labor Minister Eduardo Garcia has stepped down in reaction to the government's handling of the unrest. He has also called for early elections. That is also the same demand of protesters. They want the closure of Congress and the release of Castillo as well. He is in detention for attempting to dissolve Congress and to avoid an impeachment. To Brazil now, President Lula da Silva says those who took part in the Sunday attacks on the government buildings in the capital likely had inside help. Lula da Silva pointed the finger at, quote, conniving agents from the police and armed forces.
I am convinced that the door of the Planalto Palace was open so that these people could enter because there was no broken door at the entrance. That is, it means that someone facilitated their entry here. We're going to investigate and see what happened.
The president said he had ordered a thorough review of the presidential palace staff. The mop-up operation comes after backers of former far-right President Jair Bolsonaro stormed the presidential palace, Congress, and the Supreme Court. The storming of government buildings was aimed at overthrowing Lula's government a week after he took office. They looted government offices, destroyed priceless works of art, and left graffiti messages calling for a military coup. Nearly 2,000 rioters have been arrested and more than 1,100 put under continued detention. A poll published on Wednesday said 93% of Brazilians condemned Sunday's violent riots. Welcome to this edition of the News Review. In this edition, fighting intensifies between Russian and Ukrainian forces for control of the town of Soledar in eastern Donetsk region. Ukraine says it is resisting, quote, high-intensity Russian offensive. It also says that the Russian military has relocated main forces to the Donetsk front. Ukraine says it is a difficult phase of the war, but its forces are holding out in Soledar. The forces on Wednesday said that they were in control of the key town. Russia, however, urged caution and reported advances. Ukrainian officials say more than 500 civilians remain trapped in Soledar as fighting goes on. Another development, Russia has said that Belarus may enter the Ukraine conflict if Kiev invades their country. Also, Russia is saying that it has completed the liberation of the city of Soledar in eastern Ukraine. Now, this is some breaking news that we just received from the war. Ukraine's defense minister, in the meantime, says that his country has become, in his words, a de facto member of the NATO military alliance. He says that is because Ukraine is receiving Western weaponry and knows how to use them. He also said that the West will certainly provide Ukraine with the weapons it has long been seeking. He added that the country will also become a member of NATO by law in the near future. The Ukrainian defense minister made the comments in an interview with the BBC. Ukraine officially submitted its bid to join NATO soon after Russia launched its war in February 2022. Russia is strongly opposed to the membership. Moscow sees NATO's eastward expansion as a threat to its security. Earlier this week, the Russian security official said that his country is in fact fighting NATO and the West and not Ukraine as they continue to give arms to Kiev. Now, to continue that discussion, we're joined by our correspondent, Johnny Miller, who is located in Crimea. And also we have with us John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us live from Belgrade. Thank you very much to both of you. Let's begin with our correspondent, Johnny. We just received some breaking news that Russia announced that it has liberated the Soledar region. If you could please give us more updates on the situation there.
Yes, well, that does seem to be the case. The private military organization Wagner, fighting for the Russian in Russian forces, captured Soledar. We've seen images of their soldiers on the streets. This is a strategically important settlement. It opens the way to take Bakhmut. The Russians have been trying for months to take Bakhmut, but now we're seeing some of the most fierce fighting of the war so far, as the Russians try to succeed. There are dozens, probably hundreds of soldiers being killed or wounded every day right now. There's also been talks for weeks of the potential of another front opening up, another major offensive being launched by the Russians, a big build.
Well, it seems that we have some technical difficulties. We've lost connection with Johnny Miller. So let's continue this with Mr. John Bosnich. We heard the Ukrainian official practically stating that NATO has accepted Ukraine as a de facto member. The sign and testimony to that is the weapons that are being used in Ukraine, with Ukrainian soldiers actually being able to use them, being trained to use those weapons. What does this signify, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, the entire presentation by the Ukrainian defense minister is actually nothing more than propaganda. Point number one, NATO membership can only be decided by a unanimous vote of all current members of NATO. That means all of the countries in Europe which are members of NATO, and Canada and the United States. We already know that Hungary has said that it has no interest in widening this war and expanding the war. We're expecting easily a veto, in other words, non-agreement to Ukrainian membership from Hungary. There are other possible countries which would say the same thing. I do not think that there is any possibility, in other words, zero possibility of a unanimous NATO vote to accept Ukraine. Number two. When a country is accepted as a member of NATO, its primary requirement is that it has sovereignty over its own territory. At the current time, Russia has claimed and annexed 4 provinces, which were formerly part of Ukraine, but Ukraine does not recognize those territories as a part of Russia, which means that Ukraine itself states that it does not have sovereign control over its own territory, which means it's not eligible for membership in NATO.
Thank you very much. Our correspondent, Johnny Miller, live from Crimea, and Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst from Belgrade. Thanks for sharing your thoughts and views with us on this edition of the News Review. And now, with that, we come to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
After a couple of years of sheer anxiety, lockdowns and travel restrictions all around the world, at the beginnings of 2023, most of the planet is starting afresh and breathing a deep sigh of relief that the worst of COVID-19 epidemic is in the past and the world is ready to be open again. People can now jam the restaurants and concerts, while air travel gets a chance to rebound from historic lows and tourist spots get filled with enthusiastic visitors. The success in containing coronavirus was so significant that in September 2022, the head of the World Health Organization declared that the end of the world's ongoing pandemic is in sight. But on the other hand, roughly one-third of people worldwide have yet to receive a vaccine dose, and reportedly the vaccination rate has slowed. At the same time, health experts have raised concerns about waning immunity in vaccinated people and vaccines' reduced effectiveness against new variants.
The world was able to turn a corner in part because of the success of vaccines and medical treatment in lowering the chances of dying from the coronavirus disease. But the turn of events has also had to do with the fact that many acquired immunity as a result of getting infected by the disease. Accordingly, many scientists believe that it's just too soon to behave like the pandemic is over. To take a closer look at this issue and the quality of Iran's management of the pandemic, please join us on this edition of Iran Today.
After almost 3 years of battling the COVID-19 pandemic, the situation in Iran has reached a stable state, thanks to the nationwide vaccination program, with more than 75% of the entire population fully vaccinated. As of 21st December 2022, a total of 154,773,070 vaccine doses have been administered, with 65,113,292 people receiving at least one dose. That makes 77.52% of the 85 million Iranian population. Dr. Mokhtari Azad, a virologist, was kind enough to make all the way to our studio and share her views on the coronavirus.
Naturally, we had the experience of fighting coronavirus before. This virus comes from a large family that is shared between humans and animals. Actually, humans have their own specific viruses. That is a virus which originates from animals, needs to undergo some changes for being able to survive inside a human's body. This is actually the sixth coronavirus that we are faced today. Three of them are seasonal viruses. For example, Middle East Respiratory Syndrome, or MERS, is one of them. In the past, we had this coronavirus called SARS-1. It's been rooted out, fortunately, but then SARS-2 broke out. These viruses did not have considerable mutations. Maybe influenza had the highest number of mutation rates every 2 to 3 years. Everyone knew about it and its vaccines were updated accordingly, but unfortunately, the current virus surpassed influenza by far in terms of mutations. It mutates very fast. Sometimes it happens 2 to 3 times in a month.
During the pandemic, Iran was also facing severe sanctions by the United States and some other Western governments, which further hampered the country's economic stability and growth. As a result, the country's management in terms of quarantine and corona restrictions on the one hand and international sanctions on the other hand was put under double pressure for the duration. Dr. Sururi is the deputy health minister who received us at the Pasteur Institute of Iran. The Pasteur Institute is specialized in the development and manufacture of vaccines.
Naturally, prevention is the first step in dealing with this disease. Apart from the education that should be given to the public and those who are facing this virus, it's naturally expected that vaccines and biological materials are provided as fast as possible so that people won't get infected. Many vaccines have been made in the world. Our country, Iran, is amongst the producers as well. Coronavirus broke out in January 2020, and the then administration took swift measures to provide vaccines. A significant amount of money was sent to the few companies which produced vaccines at that time, but unfortunately, they refused to deliver the vaccines. We did not expect such behavior. We were in an emergency situation, and as time passed, some members of our families and friends lost their lives, and huge financial losses were imposed on our country. Later, however, we managed to provide vaccines from other sources.
Although drugs and basic medical equipment are exempted from economic sanctions, direct and indirect effects of the sanctions limited Iran's banking system and created widespread restrictions in terms of Iran's access to medical products in international markets. Fortunately, despite all the challenges, many hospitals in the country perform very well under the circumstances, in line with timely government-related policy adjustments.
It is obvious that economic sanctions have had severe and harmful effects on the general health of Iranians. But timely responses, good planning, and proper adjustments in the quality and quantity of hospitals and healthcare centers were the difference-making actions in Iran's management of the coronavirus pandemic.
Dr. Salehi is the head of the research department of Pasteur Institute.
Here is a national reference laboratory for COVID-19, which is part of the Pasteur Institute of Iran. It is the first diagnostic center that was established with the aim of identifying and confronting the COVID-19 virus. The construction of this center dates back to before the virus outbreak in Iran. I mean, immediately after the virus was detected in China at the end of 2019, a group of young scientists who were members of the center's rapid response team joined hands and took immediate action. Their priority was to develop diagnostic test kits. Thanks to these efforts, the first COVID-19 lab was established in the country. Before long, the country was equipped to a laboratory network that now has more than 500 members throughout the country and in remote cities of Iran. Today, people who live in the deprived parts of the country have access to coronavirus facilities which are as good as the ones in laboratories of Tehran.
According to a study published online by Cambridge University, Iran established headquarters for the COVID-19 crisis in February 2020 when the virus casualty count was almost 15 people per day. In addition, the country's health ministry published safety and prevention guidelines for many locations, especially crowded centers including hospitals, clubs, transportation systems, schools, etc., in the early days of the outbreak.
Now there are several committees inside the country, such as the Scientific Committee of the National Task Force Against Coronavirus. It's the main center for prevention and treatment processes. It's active and provides information to the people, and also it provides treatment protocols for dear doctors. Also, there is a national committee specified for coronavirus, which works under the Ministry of Health and provides very good recommendation regarding the vaccine to the people of Iran.
The Iranian authorities also sought widespread collaboration with NGOs and volunteers, as well as extensive intra-governmental collaboration to ensure the observation of safety protocols to control the spread of the disease. These collaborations ultimately resulted in an 80% reduction in traffic between cities, as well as in social gatherings and even family gatherings. The study goes on to suggest that ultimately, all of these measures led Iran to better control the spread of the virus than some advanced industrial countries, including Italy, Germany, France, Spain, and the United States.
Vaccination program in Iran has been successful and effective, and as far as I know, more than 70% of the population have been vaccinated. I also know this new strain of the virus that has been in the country for more than 3 weeks, and many people may have been infected but have recovered. At the moment, it is not clear how it will be, but I hope that we will not experience a large wave of infection.
Furthermore, from the earliest days of the outbreak, the Iranian government has used a color-coded system for classifying cities by local virus transmission risk and accordingly imposing restrictions. The risk levels are blue, yellow, orange, and red in increasing order of potential for COVID-19 transmission. Only establishments providing essential services such as food providers and medical centers can open in red cities. In cities at yellow and orange levels, most shopping malls can open and government offices may operate at reduced capacity. Also, wearing a face mask has been mandatory in enclosed public spaces and on public transportation.
As a reference center, at the beginning of the COVID pandemic in Iran, we used to check the effectiveness of all laboratory diagnostic kits inside the country. That is, kits that were used to identify the virus itself, or kits that were used to detect the virus genome, and kits that were used to detect virus antibodies, and even rapid diagnostic kits. Another important activity that we had in the field of dealing with the pandemic was that we started monitoring the variants of COVID-19 inside the country, and it has been ongoing since the beginning.
In addition, foreign travelers are required to provide a double vaccination certificate issued at least 2 weeks prior to arrival in Iran. Travelers may be tested for COVID-19 upon arrival. Those who test positive or exhibit symptoms of the disease are subject to a 2-week quarantine period at a government-approved center at their own expense.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
There's plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Here's how it looks on the page. What is known about new COVID variant XBB.1.5? It is yet another offshoot of the globally dominant Omicron COVID variant. Omicron has outperformed the earlier Alpha, Beta, Gamma, and Delta coronavirus variants since emerging in late 2021. Omicron has also given rise to many more contagious subvariants. Symptoms of XBB.1.5 are thought to be similar to those of previous Omicron strains. Most people experience cold-like symptoms. Professor Wendy Barclay from Imperial College London said XBB 1.5 has a mutation known as F486P, which restores this ability to bind to cells while continuing to evade immunity. That makes it spread more easily. She said these evolutionary changes were like stepping stones as the virus evolves to find new ways of bypassing the body's defense mechanisms. Over 96% of airplane flights have COVID-19 coronavirus in their wastewater. With fewer and fewer people wearing face masks on commercial airplane flights, is the COVID-19 coronavirus now in plain sight, so to speak? Well, the National Public Health Laboratory in Malaysia has now reported a finding that may make you want to face mask what's happening. Wastewater samples from 28 of 29 flights in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, collected from June to December 31st of last year, contained, guess what? The severe acute respiratory syndrome coronavirus 2. That's according to an article in the Malaysian newspaper Sinar Harian. This airplane wastewater testing was part of Malaysia's ongoing COVID-19 environmental surveillance that's consisted of testing samples of sewage water from a range of different sentinel locations. Coronavirus. Demand for frontline staff surges in Hong Kong retail catering sectors, but employers say workers are scarce. Demand for frontline staff in the retail and catering sectors has increased significantly since the peak of Hong Kong's fifth wave of COVID-19 infections, according to a job search platform. But employers say filling these positions has remained a challenge. Jeffrey Yao, a co-founder of MoveUp, said more adverts for frontline roles were being listed on the website as Hong Kong's epidemic situation became more manageable in recent months. Job listings on the website in December last year had increased drastically compared with the peak of the city's fifth coronavirus wave in March 2022, Yao said. The platform also found the number of featured catering jobs rose from under 4,000 in March to almost 13,000 in December, an increase of around 230%. Meanwhile, more than 8,000 retail positions were listed last month, up almost 140% compared with around 3,500 jobs in March. With vaccinations decisively lowering COVID-19 death rates globally, many countries choose to end almost all other measures to control the spread of the coronavirus in 2022, but the virus is still causing waves of illness worldwide. European Union health ministers agreed in early December to return to a pre-pandemic approach to free movement and travel without any COVID-19-related measures. But they kept the possibility to activate an emergency brake in a coordinated approach if the epidemiological situation worsens. The BF7 Omicron variant, which is prevalent in China right now, is already present in Europe and has not significantly grown. However, EU officials reportedly remain vigilant and will be ready to use the emergency brake if necessary.
When Omicron spread and the governments noticed that its symptoms are comparatively much milder and not life-threatening, this normalization of life began in many countries, including Canada and many others. Little by little, wearing masks was only mandatory in closed spaces because they felt that this one was not like the Delta virus and not very dangerous. So people used the opportunity to have their normal lives back. In Iran, too, we saw that wearing a mask was no longer mandatory from one period onwards, but at the same time, it was announced that it is better to wear a mask in closed spaces. Passengers also traveled to Iran and outside without a corona test.
Experts agree that China's relaxing of 2 years of zero COVID policies tops their list of unknowns for any future forecast. Outbreaks are occurring across the East Asian country and hospitals report being overwhelmed as COVID and flu collide. More than one-sixth of the world's population lives in China, and according to analysts, they could see a huge wave of COVID-19 in the next few months as levels of immunity there are much lower.
In addition, to identify the variants, very special equipment is needed, which are both expensive and not very available, and a lot of knowledge and expertise is needed to put those equipment into work. Therefore, it is not possible to carry out variant identification tests in a standard way everywhere, because the whole genome of the virus, or an important part of the virus, can undergo changes very fast. Therefore, to identify the variants, there is a need for substitute tests that are based on the main COVID-19 tests, tests that are based on PCR, so that we can identify the variants. Based on the experience they gained and knowing which genetic mutations to target, the researchers of the Pasteur Institute of Iran designed tests based on PCR that can be used in all laboratories.
Speaking of impacts based on world population factor, the U.S. represents 4% of the world's population, but has had 25% of all coronavirus cases. In 2022, the U.S. surpassed more than 1 million total COVID deaths and faced a year-end triple-demic, which is simultaneous epidemic of COVID-19, influenza or the flu, and the respiratory syncytial virus. In January and February of last year, the U.S. was in the midst of the initial Omicron wave. The variant emerged in late 2021. At its peak, the wave involved the highest weekly number of COVID-19 cases and nearly the highest weekly number of deaths of the entire pandemic.
More than 90% of Japanese people had been vaccinated, so is New Zealand. But when this new variant of virus entered this country and you see the death cases and compare it to the 6 million population of New Zealand, it is scary. It is worrisome to hear that in Japan 500 people dies on a daily basis. On the other hand, you see that this virus breaks out in countries with lower vaccination rates, but its people are not infected as much. Maybe it's because their people were exposed to the original virus during the past 3 years.
The World Health Organization officials have warned that since the virus is here to stay, countries will need to learn to manage it and renew the call for vaccination and make treatment more readily available worldwide, especially in poverty-stricken regions.
I think the sanctions policy is basically a cowardly approach. In general, this policy of sanctions against any country, regardless of the motivation and thought, is unfair, especially if this sanction endangers the health of a society. In Iran, sanctions target public health directly, and this is a known fact. Unfortunately, this has happened. There is a saying that goes, if you want something done, do it yourself. This surely applies to the Iranian nation. We came to the conclusion that we should roll up our sleeves and produce a vaccine. Despite the fact that we had given money, they did not provide us with COVID-19 vaccines.
Only 1 in 5 people in low-income countries has been vaccinated. Access to diagnostics and life-saving treatments for COVID-19 remain unacceptably unaffordable and unequal. The burden of post-COVID-19 condition is only likely to increase, and large gaps in surveillance remain, which is a weakness not only for detecting new variants of COVID-19, but also for monitoring the spread of other infectious diseases.
When the number of COVID-19 cases is high, the number of hospitalized deaths will naturally increase, similar to what is happening in Japan now. Therefore, I can't predict very specifically that our country will suffer a situation like in Japan or not. It is not known. We have to wait and see what happens in the next week or two. Because now the current variants that have been detected in the country go back to December, and it usually takes 2 to 3 weeks for the virus to circulate inside the country. Currently, what virologists, researchers say is that we will not experience the same conditions as Japan and China.
Accordingly, Iran is eager to completely defeat the coronavirus. To that end, Iranian officials continue to work with WHO and other partners to strengthen the country's health system in diagnosing and treating patients with COVID-19 and its new variants.
Due to the fact that both the number of vaccinations in the world has increased and the rate of natural infection has increased, the more we move forward, the rate of death and the volume of infections in different countries will decrease. But it has not been eradicated yet.
Additionally, Iran is emphasizing the continuation of vaccination process and pushing for booster shots to curtail future spikes. After all, Iran was able to turn the table on the pandemic when the government began accelerating the daily administration of COVID-19 vaccines 2 summers ago, despite illegal sanctions and vaccine politics. Availability of imported and domestically made vaccines led to the implementation of smart protocols, which freed vaccinated Iranians to engage in a wide range of activities while placing restriction on the unvaccinated before the country entered the sixth wave of the pandemic.
Regarding the strength and effectiveness of the vaccines that are produced inside the country of Iran, I have to proudly announce that Iranian vaccines are amongst the best ones in the world. Thanks to the good planning and the comprehensive measures taken by the government and the ambitious efforts made by our researchers and scientists in this regard, today we have 6 very successful platforms in the production of vaccines inside the country. They are producing very effective COVID vaccines. I would like to say specifically that some of them are protein-based and some others are inactivated vaccines. Thank God, these platforms are available and numerous vaccines have been developed. Rates of COVID-19 cases have been limited and the spread of the virus has been curtailed. We thank our scientists all over the country, as well as the ones working at the Pasteur Institute.
Cov Iran, Barakat Razi Cov Pars, the Iranian-Cuban Postal Covac, and the Iranian-Australian Spikogen were some of the vaccines used in mass vaccination campaigns. Iran is the 6th country in the world and the first in West Asia to gain the ability to produce the coronavirus vaccine. Considering the 12 vaccines that have been approved for use in Iran, experts say that Iran is one of the few countries in the world that has all vaccine production platforms. A total of 21 knowledge-based Iranian companies claim to have the capacity to produce 50 million doses of vaccine monthly and 600 million doses annually. Health Minister Bahram Einollahi has said the country is currently exporting domestically made vaccines for coronavirus to 10 African countries. Furthermore, Iranian scientists have succeeded in designing and producing the new generation of coronavirus test kit, which is able to simultaneously detect the genome and mutation for the first time in West Asia. With the outbreak of the pandemic, Iran surged its production to meet the country's need for self-protective equipment along with medical and pharmaceutical items to fight against the virus. Now, the country is one of the top 5 manufacturers of coronavirus antigen-based rapid detection kits in the world. The Director of Technology and Planning at the Science Ministry said recently that about 450 knowledge-based companies were active in the country, manufacturing protective and treatment equipment and other related products to fight the coronavirus.
For example, in the first cold season after the corona pandemic in Iran, the possibility of simultaneous occurrence of corona and influenza was raised. Well, at that time, we did not have any diagnostic kits imported to the country. As a result, the researchers of this laboratory designed the kits themselves with their ability and produced the first COVID and influenza detection kit in the country and distributed it freely between the laboratories throughout the country.
These great achievements happened in a situation when Iran was facing many oppressive sanctions by the same Western powers that claimed to be advocates of human rights, who even impeded the import of vital medicines and the necessary health and medical facilities for the treatment of the coronavirus. But thanks to the trust and reliance on domestic strength and capacity and the unremitting efforts and sacrifices of the Iranian medical staff and public vaccination, the country was able to achieve this great success.
In the current situation, due to the existence of 6 successful platforms for the development of corona vaccine, the scientific community of Iran benefits in 2 ways. One is that these platforms have the ability to make other vaccines besides the corona vaccine, and this is a kind of a bonus. And the second point is that building these platforms encourages our youth to develop science and motivates our researchers.
Today, according to the World Health Organization, Iran is among the group of countries that have been able to overcome the pandemic and prevent and treat COVID-19.
That's all for today. Thank you from the whole team. Please do tune in same time next week and each week after. Don't forget to leave your comments and topic requests. Bye for now.
ربنا
Supplication is the wealth of the believer and the bridge by which one achieves proximity to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, the Exalted.
A path to salvation, a way to connect the two worlds. On the program, Bridge.
You're listening to the program Bridge on RIB English Radio with Sheikh Al-Musavi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. Brothers, sisters, dear listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatihi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Bridge. We are looking at supplication number 8 of As-Sahif As-Sajjadiyah. The Imam alayhi salam seeks refuge in Allah from a number of things, and we go to the part where he says, وَإِثَارُ الْبَاطِلِ عَلَى الْحَقِّ. Oh Allah, I seek refuge in you from me preferring falsehood over truth. We said previously that these three words, when they combined, they create a recipe for disaster. Because a human nature, we are more easy and lenient towards falsehood. Why? Because we think it's beneficial. Not that it is true. It just we assume, it appears to us it's true. Why? Because there is a benefit in it. Cheating is a falsehood. Lying is falsehood. Taking and oppressing others is falsehood. Usurping the property of others is falsehood. Stealing is falsehood. But why do we do it? I mean, why do I steal from others if I know it's false and I know it's wrong? Only because I see there's a benefit in it. The truth and the reality of things is that I should be honest. I should be truthful. But I don't. This is me preferring batil over haq. And haq are the laws of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He placed for us. And He said, make sure you follow my rules and regulations and do not transgress. There are limits, hududullah, fala tata'addawha. Do not cross the limits of Allah. Break and we will come back.
Rabbana.
A path to salvation. A way to connect the two worlds.
The bridge between Allah and His creation.
A bridge that is meant to take us to Allah, to take us to His proximity. A bridge that is in the form of dua and supplication.
In this program, we offer commentary on the du'as of As-Sahifat As-Sajjadiyah of Imam Sajjad alayhi salatu wasalam.
The famous book of litanies, the Psalms of Islam.
Bridge.
Rabbana, Rabbana, Rabbana.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So we said, Allah said to us, there are limits, there are rules and regulations. Make sure you stay within these boundaries. But do not cross and go to the other side, which is to prefer falsehood over truth. Now, the true belief of a mu'min relies in two things. One, understanding haq and truth, and two, following it even if it brings harm to oneself. You see, for example, the Muslims in the early Islamic era, they were very few in numbers. They were like you can count them by the hand. And they are faced with aggression. They're faced with the entire tribe of Quraysh and what have you.
and they were prosecuted for the beliefs. Literally, some of them got killed, some of them were imprisoned, some of them were tortured physically, some of them had to flee their homeland. They were prosecuted. Why? Because they preferred to say the haqq over batil. They knew what haqq is, and they preferred it, even if it caused them pain and harm. While others, they understood it was true. They understood it was haqq, but they just decided to ignore it and prefer batil over it. So when they listen to the Prophet, they say, he's true. It's true what he's saying. They just denied it. Same thing happened with Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam. He says to them, aren't I the Prophet's cousin? Aren't I this? Aren't I that? And they go, yeah, you are. Then why? We just don't want to, because if we do, we will lose money, we'll lose this and that. The same thing happened in Karbala. Imam Hussein alayhi salam stood in front of an army of 32,000. And he said to them, aren't I the last grandson of the messengers of Allah? They said, yes. Aren't I the son of Fatima, the daughter of your prophet? They said, yes. Aren't I the son of Ali? They said, yes. Isn't this the prophet's clothes? Isn't this his sword? This is his turban? They said, yes. They said, then why are you fighting me? Again, preferring haqq or preferring batil over haqq. That's the problem. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Listening to the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Bridge. So we said that knowing haqq by itself is not enough. We need to understand how we can prefer it over falsehood. And that's where the hardship comes, is to testify against yourself just for the sake of haqq. The Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam, it was narrated that he never told a lie in his life. And obviously, because he's a prophet, obviously he will never tell a lie. That one day they said he wanted to leave the city of Mecca. So Abu Dharr had to put him in a bag or something, like, you know, hide him. And as Abu Dharr was leaving, carrying the prophet and leaving, when they saw him, they said to him, what do you have in this thing that you're carrying? He said, it's the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa sallam. And they laughed at him and said to him, go. You're mocking us. The truth always sets you free, as we say. But you need to have the courage and the capacity to accept it. I have spoken to many people of different schools of thoughts and different faiths, and I've even heard this many times. They say, what you're saying is true. What you're saying makes a lot of sense. I just can't accept it. Or because my book says so. For example, I had a discussion with someone about Trinity, and he said, what you're saying makes a lot of sense. It's very logical that Trinity does not exist. But he says, because it is in the Bible, I will have to go with it. Again, preferring falsehood over truth. In every moment of our life, in every aspect of our life, we always go through moments where we prefer falsehood over truth. And that's the sad reality of things. And even beginning in our own houses, sometimes we put in situations where we prefer falsehood over truth with our spouses, with our children, with our parents, and then it goes outside with our co-workers, with our neighbors, with the people that we deal with, only because we want what is best for number one, even if it means I have to step on the haqq, which is something that we should never do. Thank you for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Al Musawi in the program Bridge on IRIB English Radio.
هرگز نگیرد تا ابد آقا کسی جای تو را هرگز مخواد از کف دهم عشق و تولای تو را
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en. This is IRIB